there's this obligation that we feel to create visibility. I don't think we're invisible. If you're looking, we're here. Uno, dos, tres.
Hey, I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela.
And today, we are sharing with you, dear listener, our Live in the Thick show from Boston.
Woo-hoo!
Yes, Boston, the place I have called home for almost all my life. We talked about how visible or invisible the Latino community is in Boston.
Right. And it was really eye-opening for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for each one of you who's listening, because, you know, even though it's not talked about a lot, the Latino experience in Boston is really interesting when you compare it to other places and what it's like to be a group that is present and yet not necessarily recognized, right?
Yep.
So, yeah.
But before we play the show, Maria, we just have to acknowledge the In the Thick fans that showed up to the PRX podcast garage and filled the room. It was such a special night. We love you. We talked to so many of them. They're the best.
We love our In the Thick fans because you guys are just so committed. Because that recording in Boston, I don't know if you guys remember that crazy, crazy spring storm that happened a couple of weeks ago. You know, flights got canceled. Airports were like overrun, water everywhere. And yet there you were, our In the Thick fans. Yeah. So dedicated. It was standing room only and sold out. So here's the show.
All right.
Wow.
We are so, so happy to be here.
Boston.
Welcome to In the Thick. This is a podcast about politics, race, and culture from a POC perspective. I'm Maria Hinojosa, live in Boston.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela, live in Boston with you, Maria.
Yes,
I'm so
all
excited.
Right. Live audience.
Yes, sold out audience at the PRX Podcast Garage.
So we are joined today by Marcela Garcia. She's a columnist and an editorial board member with the Boston Globe. Hey, Marcela.
Hi, Maria. Hi, Julio.
Hey,
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, we're so excited to have you.
And we're also joined today by Betty Francisco, founder of Fit Nation Ventures and Latina Circle. What is up, Betty?
Hello. Hello. So happy to be here.
All right. So our live show here in Boston, we're going to talk about something that is talked about so much here in Boston, not, which is the Latino-Latina community in the city of Boston.
Right, right, right. And how, whether it's visible or invisible, right?
Right. And really, there's like some pretty incredible data.
Right. So we're going to frame this conversation. We're going to start with some context. Boston's Latino community right now makes up 20% of the city's population. And almost half of the city's public school students. So, you know, absorb that for a second. But the question is, have Latinos arrived in Boston with all these numbers? Or is there another Boston that keeps them isolated, invisible from the rest of the city? So, Marcela?
Yeah, which one is it? Have Latinos arrived? Are they being seen? Or are Latinos and Latinas in Boston still essentially invisible?
Of course. They are very invisible. And, you know, there's a question of the numbers that, yes, of course, we are here. You know, 20% of Boston's population is not a small feat. But that doesn't mean that we participate in decision making. That doesn't mean we participate in policy making. That doesn't mean we are represented in boards, in places where big, big, important topics are being discussed. We're not at the table. There are many, many spaces where we're just not there. We are overrepresented in certain areas or industries. Obviously, you know, we're talking about low-wage labor, right? Who cleans the buildings in Boston? Who, you know, delivers newspapers? You name it. We're there, but we're just not represented at the highest echelons of power in Boston. That's why, I mean, we have a right, but we really are not seen, and we do definitely would not participate in, you know, the power in the decision-making in Boston. We don't have a say.
But what's your personal experience with Boston? What's your Boston story where you felt like, as a Latina, like in Boston, where you felt like you were invisible or you were visible? Like, what can you share personally, specifically about your experience?
So that's a very interesting story. I obviously, you know, I arrived here years ago, and I became a journalist. I was always sort of working in the Spanish language media, mm-hmm. in that space. But I always felt that part of my mission also by covering the Latino community here was also to build bridges with the mainstream or with the general population, right? I became a freelancer. And thanks to you, I was actually remembering this story tonight. It's an important example of how we can sort of like penetrate institutions or places where we're not seen.
Right.
So I was freelancing for the Boston Business Journal. I had done TV because I felt that the stories of Latinos, the stories that I had been covering in the Spanish language newspaper, were not being covered in the mainstream media. And one day Julio calls me and he says, I met the editor of the editorial page of Boston Globe. And I said, oh, no kidding. And he's like, I'm going to introduce you to him. He puts me in touch with Peter. Next thing I know, I'm writing columns for the Boston Globe.
Nice.
So I owe my entry, you know, in part to Julia. But the reason why I mentioned this is because it was just an email that, you know, that sort of like started a chain of events. And believe me when I tell you that the Globe knows that they don't have enough representation of Latinos. And so it took an editor that sort of understood and recognized, you know, the lack of, you know, there was a gap. They hired me full time and it's been 4 years.
So I would actually say, so Marcela, congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah.
But I would actually say that it wasn't just an email. What it was actually someone like Julio owning his power and his voice to write the
email. Exactly. And that's what I was trying to tell you.
So Betty, well, thank you.
There was a second part to it, but yes, that's
so
exactly
Betty,
what it was.
Betty. Yeah. So for you, tú eres, ¿cómo te describes? How do you identify yourself?
I am Chino Rican. I am from New York City, grew up in Puerto Rico. My father's Chinese, my mother's Puerto Rican. So Chino Rican. And recently I've met a Korean Puerto Rican, a Venezuelan Puerto Rican that I'm about to meet sometime soon. So we're coming, like we're, you know, it's a force.
Could be tonight.
Could be. So I came to Boston in 1994. I came here for law school. I knew nobody here. And frankly, when I stepped foot into the dorms at Northeastern University, which was dreadful to sleep in a dorm, I was like, what is this place? Like, there's no black people here. And I came from literally New York City, where it was diverse Mecca, all kinds of people. And just for background, I grew up in New York City public housing. I am from the project. So to me, diversity was always around me. And the first time I actually met and integrated with white people was in high school, because I went to music and art high school. So when I came here, I felt very isolated. I didn't really understand, like, why did the city look this way? And I kept going back to New York, right, to cut my hair, to buy clothes, because I was like, why do people wear sweatpants here? Like, what's wrong? What is that look? I don't know.
Also the importance.
Oh, the importance, yes. Anyway, so I slowly got used to it. It became about the network. I joined, you know, in law school was the Latino student group. I did a joint degree, a JD MBA. The business school was very international. So that's, you know, again, I gravitated towards places where I could feel like I was back at home in New York. Mm. But really, I finally found the black people, and they were, and the Latinos, they were in Dorchester and Roxbury, you know, and you were told back then, oh, be careful. You can't go into Southie. You can't go, you know, here. You got to be really, really careful. And I was like, why does Boston look this way? Because I didn't have the background around the politics of the city.
You have a Boston story, don't
I
you?
I do have a Boston story.
Okay.
So actually, I have a Brookline story.
Which is...
Is okay. It the same thing?
It's kind of in the middle.
No, oh my God, I'm sorry. I just made a Boston faux mistake.
Okay, right, but what is your Boston area story?
Boston was actually the first city that I arrived to as an immigrant from Mexico, because my father was a visiting scholar or et cetera at a little place named Harvard. My father was a medical student, a researcher at that point. And so my earliest memory, actually the city where I learned to speak English, was Boston.
Whoa.
When I was like 3 years old, I remember we lived
in
a house.
Does John Kelly know that?
No, John Kelly doesn't know that, but we could let him know. But, you know, I remember sitting in the home, and I had a little record player of 45s. Uh-huh. Remember those? No, you guys are like, what is she talking about? Really tiny little records like this, right? And I was listening to supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. And I was like, I want to speak that language. So that happened right here in Boston. So I, and then many years later, I end up coming back and anchoring a show here at WGBH, Conversations, One-on-One with Maria Hinojosa. And I think what was interesting there was that people loved the fact that we were bringing that diversity onto the public television airwaves, but still it was like, it still felt like we were just cracking the door open a little bit. But I think, you know, when you talk about those statistics.
And I will say before we move on, having been here since 1986 in a progressive city, living in Cambridge, living in Boston, now living in the suburbs, the invisibility is just constant.
And that, I think, is the other part of the story, right? Because you've been talking about the invisible labor force in the city of Boston and its surroundings, right? But there's this other thing that is happening with Latinos and Latinas in Boston, which, seriously, there are some badass Latinos and Latinas in the city of Boston.
Right. And have been here forever.
I mean, I'm just saying, right? Yeah. So both of you are actually part of that. But Marcela, when you see that other side of Boston, you know, the people who are succeeding in professional realms, what does that look like? What does that Boston Latinx look like?
It's very real. When I was the editor of the Spanish language newspaper, we used to do this thing. It was like this listing of the 100 most powerful people for Latinos in Boston, right? And it didn't mean just, you know, the mayor or the first Latino mayor in Lawrence or, you know,
or elected Big Poppy or Peter
Big
Martinez
Poppy or whatever. Right. No, it was, you know, the Harvard scholar who was basically changing the world with his research, or at MIT, or, you know, at the Broad Institute working at the Project Genome, or, you know, a teacher making a difference in the Boston public high schools. And it always surprised me how many Latinos are in all these different spaces, which is like all over, right? At least there's one. You know, I was talking with someone earlier. Yeah, I was talking with someone earlier, Michael, who works in advertising. And, you know, I always ask this question. How many Latinos are there where you work? Are you the only one? Or and it's always, not enough.
You always ask that question?
I kind of always ask that question. Are you the only Latino, or who, you know, how many Latinos are there working with you? How is it, you know, what does it look like? Where do you work? The answer is always like, there's just not enough of us, right? And so, but we're there. We're in those spaces. At least one of us is there, you know?
I wonder when you heard the comments from John Kelly, actually, just to kind of go there. What was your reaction when you heard John Kelly basically saying, you know, these immigrants don't have the capacity to integrate and assimilate? And being now a part of Boston and thinking about John Kelly's Boston and the fact that Boston is a huge immigrant community historically, what went on for you when he said those things?
Well, it just pisses me off. Right?
All right, just call it the way it is, yo. Like,
just makes you mad, because the thing is, the Latino community is so dynamic and diverse, right? So we span across all the races. And so it depends on how you identify, right? There's some Latinos who don't even look it. They might look like they're white. They may not be outward. They may not lead this way. There's some who are Afro-Latino who you might think are African-American. So to say that we're like this monolithic group that, you know, is all, you know, can't assimilate, can't contribute, can't succeed, is completely false. It just plays into this racist narrative that we have in this city. And so, you know, the way we combat that, I'm constantly looking for the success stories, right? So Latina Circle, which is one of the organizations that I started with, Eneida Roman, we're both lawyers. We come from a background where there are few Latinas to begin with. But we were always looking to elevate, you know, the voices of those who were in these roles to say, hey, we're here, we matter, and we're mentoring those that are coming up to say, this is a space where you can be and you can grow and you can advance. So there's this constant obligation that we feel to create visibility, right? So I hear the word invisible and it irks me, because I don't think we're invisible. If you're looking, we're here, right? And there's ways to find us. Clearly still state the inequities, but I think that if we start to focus on the positives and what we're doing well, that we can start to drive some change.
So if you want to clap for that, you could totally clap for that, because Betty, she is a badass. But I think this is a really good transition to in the economy, the last four decades in Boston, Latinos are overrepresented in lower paying jobs like maintenance, hospitality, the food industry, you know, language barriers, lack of access to higher education. But when you play the game, when you do bring the success, and I just want to point out a specific example of when Latinos play the game and are successful, and it still raises issues. And I'm going to bring up what happened locally at the Seaport District with La Casa de Pedro, the Venezuelan restaurant that's in Watertown that is an institution. And La Casa de Pedro, right, they decided to go to the Seaport District because the Seaport District was a booming area. It opened its second restaurant in the area, and it was one of the few POC-owned businesses in this neighborhood. You're doing everything right. But after 18 months, they're over $3 million in debt. They're fighting with the landlord to keep the space. Plus, and WGBH did a piece about it, and you saw the Boston Globe, residents are saying in this effort to maintain the restaurant, they've created hip-hop events and brunches, and they're bringing in, quote-unquote, the wrong crowd. So, Marcela, the questions of segregation, gentrification, economic inequality, when you're trying to play the game, is the Latino community still fighting that invisibility still in Boston, and why?
I think those struggles, you know, being a small business owner in Boston, for sure that it's sort of stacked against people of color, but not just because, I mean, you just need so many resources, not just financial, but you need support from the city. You need to navigate all these worlds. I mean, Pedro fought delays because he couldn't get specific permits. And so there was one thing after another, bureaucracy, you know, red tape coming from City Hall, all these things for a small business owner who's also a person of color. I think, you know, they really do amount to significant barriers. And so then you start thinking about, you know, racism and all this. But I just don't think that was the only factor.
Right.
But it definitely is harder for, or the deck is stacked, you know, a little against people of color in so many ways.
And, so here's what I find interesting, you know, because I live in New York now. I don't know. I just find it interesting that there's so much talk about one restaurant.
Right.
In one place.
Right.
Owned by one Latino.
Right.
Who's trying to make it. And now that's he's like, not. And it's like, oh, my God. And I'm like,
in a way, 30 stories in New York City.
Yeah. I'm like, that happens in New York like all the time. So right. I'm just like, really, like, whoa. All right. It's a big deal. I think that what's happening is that it's opening up this conversation. So after I left Boston and I was growing up in Chicago, the big Boston story for us, of course, nationally, was what happened with the busing. Right. So the fact that there's still the legacy of that kind of discrimination, we're going to talk about that in a second. But before that, Betty. So who are the Latinos in Boston? I mean, you are Chino-Riqueña. You're Puerto Riqueño. Marcela, tú eres de dónde?
Mexicana.
Mexicana, paisana. That's it?
Obviously, there are not enough Mexicans in Boston.
Okay, we're going to work on that.
You're the number fifth percentile there. No.
So who are the Latinos?
If you go by numbers, it's Puerto Ricans, then Dominicans. I think it's Colombians next, right? And Mexicans.
Central Americans.
The Central Americans.
And the Mexicans are five. And then,
yeah. And so, you know, and Boston's 20%, but you've got cities, you've got Chelsea, right? 36%.
Which is
right outside. You've got Lawrence, 77%. Holyoke, Springfield, they hover above 50% of the population is Latino. So when you look at numbers, you know, we're 12% of the Massachusetts population. So this is a demographic that's going to continue to grow. It's populating the economies in these cities. Mm-hmm. The inequities that we have are all shaped on a legacy of racism and driven purely by policy.
And so we need structural.
Right. Yeah. And so when you look at, you know, who are those that are succeeding, it's folks that have learned to navigate the system to penetrate into certain positions of power, right? And they're starting to open those doors. You don't have to be the highest ranking person, but you can have influence. And part of influence is what you talked about, is putting your name out there, being the champion for somebody. You know, if I recommend somebody for a board or commission or for, you know, this role, because of the position that I'm in right now, they will listen and they will actually grant that person an interview, or maybe just outright say, okay, Betty said this. Let me.
Damn, you got a Betty said this in Boston? Give it up.
Yo, Betty said that. All right, let's make that happen. Betty said
it. Leave Pedro there. You know, don't mess around with him.
Yeah, I want to be on Betty's good side.
Don't mess with me.
It's not what Julito said. It's what Betty said.
You know, we're starting to see the change. It's slow, right? So it's how do we really ramp it up? Yeah. And it takes this village of constantly showing how we are of significant value, right? In all the spaces that where there's one, right? Imagine if there were multiple ones. And what I want to see us talking is we are assets. We're valuable. You look at all these companies now, they're dying for Latino talent. Some are doing it to check the box, but a lot of them get it that diversity is about creating voices that drive total change that creates upward value. And Latinos are a significant part of that conversation. And we need to talk like that.
Because we're going up, yo.
Yo.
We're moving up.
Yeah, no, we've all been the only Latino in the room in these companies. We've all feel like this notion of imposter syndrome when we finally get that opportunity. And it's okay to be human and say, this is hard.
I'm thinking like in New York City, you know, 25, 30 years ago, it was a city that was divided on race. But I got to say, New York, of course, it's not perfect, but, you know, it's definitely not divided by race in that way. So, Marcela, give me an example, just a small little example of something personal that you remember that is like, wow, this is what legacy or structural inequality or structural racism looks like in Boston.
Ooh. I know. Well, I mean, just the fact that I'm still the only Latina in the editorial board.
You're still the only Latina?
I'm still the only Latina, the first Latina ever. There's never been a Latina in that place in the editorial board of the Boston Globe, ever. And so, I mean, I see it every day. You know, I have to play that role, right? Sometimes it's great. Sometimes it's a burden. Sometimes it's like something I love to do. And sometimes I hate it. But because it's so exhausting. I mean, you try to normalize it at this point. Like I'm so used to it.
Used to what?
Used to having to be the one to explain to the rest of the board, for example, why a certain story that has to do with immigrants or Latinos matter for us to cover or to write an editorial about, right? In this era of Trump, obviously, you know, there's no shortage of things to write about or to be enraged about. And so every time it's like I have to go against this notion that they don't see the struggles. They don't see the life of a Latino.
It feels like they don't see in Latinos and Latinas a market that they need. Because if I'm the Boston Globe, I'm thinking I got to get these Latinos and Latinas to start reading this paper so that I have a paper in the future.
That's the other thing. They don't recognize that.
They don't see it as true consumers.
And so I feel like that's my responsibility, right? To bring those ideas, to bring those issues.
She doesn't give up.
No. Yeah. It's amazing.
I need the job.
So Betty, Betty, give us an example of what, you know, legacy racism, structural racism or inequality actually looks like.
So because I work a lot now more in the housing market and with developers, especially low-income developers, where you see it played out in a really obvious way is in real estate development, right? So you see communities of color where you've got more and more developers coming in and doing high-end luxury development, right? It's creating displacement. And part of what you were hopeful for is that there will be at least some work opportunities for those in the community, some opportunity to maybe be part of the overall investment, right, in this project. And there's zero, right? There's projects that get developed with zero labor in that community being used, with zero minority contractors, with zero minority investment. And so that is part of the legacy of racism, structural racism, where you are shut out of the entire economic process, the wealth building process. And in the real estate market, you see the legacy, you know, through redlining, the GI Bill. I mean, it goes way, way back. And you might say, well, those, you know, those are all cleaned up now. Like that doesn't exist anymore. But you've left people so far back that for you to advance up and be, say, at parity with, say, our white families, it won't happen unless there's real systemic changes, policy changes made.
So Julio, just one example, one for real example.
No, I'll give a real one. Like. Before I went back to journalism, I was the first like editorial Latino director of a K-6 reading textbook company. So I started as a bilingual editor, but then I became the guy in charge of a $400 million division that produced.
You left all of that work for a
football. Yeah,
saying.
People stopped buying textbooks, and then I was like, oh, I should be a guy. I lost a job. But I think it was very interesting, even though I had very good mentors and I did have like allies, I've always had to constantly prove myself. You're always seen as not good enough. And especially in places like Boston, where you are sort of this museum object. Like when you're the only Latino in the room or Latina in the room, you have to represent every flipping like Spanish-speaking, Portuguese, Creole-speaking person in the community. And I see more Latino professionals and Latino professionals actually starting to have these conversations. You don't feel alone. You feel supported.
So there was a really beautiful moment, Betty, that I experienced with you at a conference called Amplify. Remember that?
Right.
So a lot of pomp and circumstance in this room, and there were, 200, 100 and something. And in this room, people went around and they were all saying, you know, my name is Fulanita de Tal, and I'm running for office here in Lawrence, and I am so-so, and I'm in office in Holyoke, and I'm so-and-so, and yeah. And I was like, whoa, forget Plymouth Rock. This is like the new face of politics in the state of Massachusetts. So, and I think about places like Lawrence, like Holyoke, as challenged as they may be, but I'm like, this is very Latino, and I don't understand how it can be, Betty, that the powers that be don't see that, that somehow they have the blinders on when we have so many Latinos and Latinas in the state of Massachusetts actually rising up and saying, we're going to do something. So how does that happen where they're just... the politicians of the moment in the state, se hacen de la vista gorda? They don't want to see this?
Yeah, well, it's about the sharing of the power, right? That nobody wants to give up power. The mentality of it's a zero-sum game. For you to gain this seat, I have to give one up, right? Rather than looking at it from the standpoint of truly representative democracy requires diverse voices and perspectives, right? We can't tackle the really difficult issues that we have in this state and in this country unless we have lived experiences, right? People in office that can tell the stories, that have lived through them, and that can create really innovative solutions, right, for what we're going through. And I think part of it is that we're not always looking, right? So even us, I think we're all guilty of this. We may not always be looking. I mean, Marcela and I was like, who's the Latino? Who's the, where are they?
No, you guys, like the name. Like
we're like crazy about it because we
you're like Latino. 1 o'clock.
We're like, we know there's more.
There's more. Radar.
There's more.
The Latino radar. The radar.
They're hiding. So, but there are like a lot, and the thing is, you have to be looking. You know what we're seeing is just this need for change. We call it the new face of Latino power, right? Because we've got young people stepping up now and saying, we want to be the face of change.
Who's your favorite new candidate person? Somebody who you're just
Juana
like...
Juana Matias.
And tell us a second.
Lawrence, Andy Vargas.
Who are they?
So Juana Matias started as state rep in Lawrence. She's Dominican. She's the first immigrant Latina in the Massachusetts legislature, and she's now running for U.S. Congress.
Okay.
Okay. Andy Vargas, right? Haverhill Hill, who started out as city council. He ran, I think, at 22, 23 years old, now 25, and then he just won state rep. So where we still need representation is at the Senate level. There's only one person of color, and it's Sonia Chang Diaz, who's a China Latina.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
There is one person of color in the Massachusetts State Senate.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a mic drop. But, what?
Just add some facts that are happening now in Massachusetts. We do have to acknowledge Representative Jeffrey Sanchez, who he served for 14 years in the House of Representatives, and he's also now chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, which is huge. Like that, you want to talk about power. But also Governor Baker, I believe he has two high-ranking Latino officials, and... I'm sorry, four. This is what I want to ask you about political power, Latinos, Marcela. Is the power starting to turn? Is it, or is it just like a checkoff item? Or do you really like what Betty's saying? People are running and...
Yeah, little by little, it's definitely a new generation. To go back to your earlier question about political power and why is it so entrenched here, or why is it so hard here for Latinos to gain political power? It's definitely you know, it's very slow. I mean, it took Jeffrey Sanchez 14 years to get
right
to this position. But the thing about Massachusetts and Boston in particular, it's so parochial. And you got to look at the history of political power. I mean, it's the Italians and the Irish Americans. So you literally have to fight them.
Those immigrants,
right. And so their political power is so entrenched. And look at not just elected positions, but appointed positions, for example. There was an opening for commissioner of education, right? For the first time, you know, there was a Latina running, and it was amazing because we're talking about a state where, you know, with kids with, you know, again, Boston public schools, nearly half of the population is Latino. And so there was a big opportunity here for a Latina to be named commissioner of education, and it didn't happen, right? And so it's this entrenched power that the Irish Americans and the Italian Americans don't want to give up, you know, because they don't want to share
it. So pupusas, Domino's, and, you know, tacos al carbón every Sunday and got everyone together.
On every corner.
On every corner, right?
I like that.
So I think this is a time where we turn it over to our audience.
All right, we got a question.
Okay.
Yes.
Hi, I'm Maria. Everyone in this room, all of you up there, are clearly very successful.
No, we just look it. And, we fake it till we make it.
You know, to like the mainstream white audience, you're respectable, you're legible, and all of us in this room wield some privilege over other Latinxes who perhaps right. don't speak English, who perhaps aren't U.S. citizens. And so for the 20% of Latinxes in Boston who are overrepresented in low-paying, considered unskilled labor, mm-hmm. how do we bring them up with us, those of us who have a platform? I mean, we're talking here about like the success stories, right? Like showing the successful Latinxes and like, but in a way that's also playing into like the politics of respectability. Yep. And all of us have value, even if we're not visible and we don't have a platform and we're not a super success story. So how do we bring the Latinxes in Boston who truly are in a way invisible, who don't have a platform, how do we bring them up with us?
Yeah. So one of the things that I do in my job is to be very careful about the language that you use. Because, for example, one of the things that bothered me about the John Kelly comment when he talked about...
Just one of the things.
Yeah. One of the things he said was the low skilled, right? And so we have to get over this idea and start talking about, you know, you still need a ton of skill, a ton of, you know, work ethic. And so we have to start shifting that conversation too. You know, it's a very small way of bringing people up. I'm doing now actually a story about Rosa, the cleaner who cleans our building, who cleans our office. You know, she has TPS. She's cleaned that building for 18 years. She has two kids. We came here around the same time. And so I was also a low-skilled worker too. You know, I was a nanny. I worked as a nanny for 3 years to pay for my education. And so, you know, that's how I try to sort of bring people up, and it's not easy.
So, Julito, I'm sorry. So, oh. Julio.
That's okay.
What is it that you do to help bring somebody with you?
Part of what we do, Maria, is we're always looking for those voices. Those voices matter to us. That's always in me, right? But I do believe that you can get easily into the good immigrant, bad immigrant, successful immigrant, low skill, like we have to constantly check ourselves, Maria, all the time about that. So I'm glad that Maria asked that question.
And I'm glad that all of you came here to our live recording of In the Thick. Thank you so much, Marcela Garcia, columnist with the Boston Globe. Betty Francisco with Latina Circle. Thank you so much for joining Julio and me on this edition of live edition of In the Thick in Boston.
Thank you so much for having us.
So what'd you think, Julio? I mean, you know, getting national attention to your home city, Boston.
FTW, which means for the win. I was so proud of that night.
And we love to do this because it's an opportunity for us to, you know, to come to your city, right, and take this conversation and not only have it in a smart, intimate way with like experts on the ground, mm-hmm. but then to give it national context. So I'm really, really, really thankful. And I want to give a special shout out and thanks to the Podcast Garage and to PRX who helped put together our live Boston show. It was really wonderful through the rain. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela.
And remember, my dear listener, please go rate and review us. If you're a first-time listener, please, it's essential that you do this. Also, follow us on Twitter and Instagram at In The Thick Show. And find us on Facebook and like us. And of course, this week, what are we going to do? Tell everybody in your gym this week. And our producer is Stephanie LeBeau. Our associate producer is Nicole Rothwell. Futuro Media's executive director is Erica Dilde. Our theme music is Comencemos by Jungle Fire. The music that you heard is courtesy of Nacional Kep and ZZK Records. We'll see you next time on In The Thick. Thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it. Hasta la próxima.
Nos vemos.
In this together, High School Musical.
You guys got the High School Musical reference, yeah.
Come on, we can sing it. We're all in this together. There we know how we go.
Oh, that was so cute. And you're such a dork.
I know.
You're such a dork.
But you know what I'm saying?
So, well, let me bring it back to reality here, okay?